and welcome to episode 96 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Sydney.
And I'm Chris.
Today, we're talking about our time at Origins 2018 from the car, as in we're driving right now and Chris wanted to press record. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Chiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other Patreons as well.
For the record, this car practically drives itself.
Only because it has lane assist.
Yeah. It yells at me, though, when I'm not steering, so.
Good.
But I don't have that on turned on, so if we go off the side of the road, you'll hear screeching tires.
You'll all know.
Yeah, that's all that happened. So, this is episode 96.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, which means we are 4 episodes away from episode 100. And I've had a number of people say, are you going to get Josh and Kitty on the same episode for episode 100? Absolutely, 100%. We will be all 3 together in the same room for that particular episode for sure.
Yay.
We have all kinds of different things planned for what happens after 100. But during 100 right now, I'm thinking of just doing kind of a look back on how we got to where we got to. And I'm putting out a call to the listeners for favorite moments, favorite segments, favorite things, what you like, what you don't like. I think I mentioned last week that I'm going to put a survey up. I really do plan to do that. So that will happen, I promise. I really am just looking forward to the end of, I guess I'm not looking forward to the end of the first 100 episodes, but it's kind of cool.
It's an achievement.
Yeah, that we got to 100 episodes. So that's coming up in 4 weeks. I think that's just after. No, that's just before our Gen Con show. So, to give Josh a shout out, we do 50 and 100, not 52 and 104. So, if we're doing 104, it'd be right around the Gen Con time. But this will be just after Dice Tower Con and just before Gen Con. Let's see. Speaking of which, I promised people that I would have an Origins giveaway something. And that something is going to be Great Western Trail. Although, I should give out Great Western Trail. Century Eastern Wonders. So, Sydney, you stood in line for almost an hour to get this game.
It was a line wrapped around the booth selling the game.
And you got it. So, we actually got a couple copies of it. We opened one of them, played it through. It's actually pretty good. The game, Eastern Wonders by itself, is a good game. I don't know that I'd play it over Spice Road right out of the box, because I think with Spice Road, you can really, it's easier to teach new people, be like, hey, let's go play this game and here's how it works and you're good to go. Eastern Wonders is a little bit more intimidating because you have this hex board you're moving around on. The mechanics are very, very similar, but the box comes with 2 different sets of instructions. One is for Eastern Wonders by itself, and one is for combining the 2 games. And I really think that combining the 2 games is where it shines. I've only looked at the instructions, we haven't actually played it yet, but I recommend that that's the way you play it, because playing it through with what's in the box and looking at the combined instructions, it's a much better game combined.
I will also say that with the Eastern Wonders version, it is much more important, in my opinion, to have the actual mat. So the first game and the second game came with optional play mats, and of course Chris got both. But the second one is much easier to visualize the actual play area when you can put the little tiles onto the mats. Whereas in the first one, when you're playing with just the cards and the spices, it's really nice and cute to have it in front of you all organized. But this one is kind of important, especially when you combine them, because it has a place for the cards as well as the tiles, as well as the spices.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think that the player mat for this one is pretty good. Otherwise, the tiles it's just kind of a little tricky to see what should go where. So, how do you enter? If you haven't entered already, shame on you. You knew I was going to get something decent. So, you're going to enter by emailing us at giveaway@tabletopgametalk.com. Put the subject June giveaway or Origins giveaway. Either one of those will qualify. And we are going to be probably doing this drawing next week. So I'm giving you 1 week notice. I know that's a little early because June is going away, but I also want to do a giveaway on our 100th episode. So this week is your last week to enter. Next week, we will have a new contest for our 100th episode giveaway. Dun, dun, dun. So the next convention Sydney and I are going to be at is
Dice Tower Con,
which is only in 2 weeks.
Super excited.
Yeah, this will be our third Dice Tower Con. Our first one I proposed.
Yeah.
Our second one you were still with me, so.
Yeah, right. Anniversary.
Yeah, that works. This one is just because it's really fun, so we'd like to keep going to it. It's in Orlando, and it's over the 4th of July week. So.
And was it last year or the year before one of the listeners showed up and we played games with him?
Oh, yeah. If you're a listener and you want to show up, Tom Bly actually taught us Burgle Bros.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first year or the second year, but it was fun. If you want to teach me a game, finding me at a convention, I am willing to play any game you want to teach me because I don't like learning games, contrary to popular belief. But I would love, actually, no, I don't love teaching games from a rule book, but I love learning games.
Yeah, so. you enjoy the rule books.
Yeah. So join us. If you're in Orlando, let us know. We'll get a game in. Even if you don't have tickets to Dice Tower Con, you can always just come and we'll play games with you in the hotel. That's what we did with Tom. So. Our next convention after that is Gen Con. We have a live show that Friday at 5. So if you're going to be there, awesome. And I think that's enough announcements for driving from the car and doing it from memory, unless I'm missing something as Sydney is staring at the iPad.
No, looks good.
All right. So we're not doing feedback this week because
we're looking at an iPad in a car.
Yeah, and it would be dangerous because I'd be like, look at all this feedback I have to read or monitor or something. So we're going to go directly into On Topic without any music whatsoever because, again, driving. I wonder if you can hear the driving on the...
Probably in the background. We haven't been honked at yet, so...
Yet. Anyway, Origins. This show seemed like it was forever long.
It was super fun, and after the first day, I knew that it was going to be amazing.
Yeah. So we drove in, and we're driving now, which... Typically, I don't like driving to cons at more than a couple hours away because I like having more con time and less driving time. But Origins is one of those things that's just far enough away where it's within the range of driving, but too close where flying makes any sense.
So also allows for more trunk space to bring games home.
Exactly. Now, Origins is not a big buy games convention. Very few things actually come out at Origins to buy. It's more of a preview for Gen Con.
Except for you.
Right. Well, I'm going to buy anything that actually is buyable, of course. So I think that what we did here was we picked up Eastern Wonders. We picked up Vast, although Vast has been out for a while.
But that game was super cool.
It was. And we still haven't played it. But we were walking through, I think this was, this was Thursday. So our first day. Let's back up a little bit. We drove in on Wednesday. So we got there Wednesday because Wednesday night we went up and we played Witch Hunt.
Yeah.
You play tested a game, which I won't say the name of just in case.
It was a different version of a social deduction game where there was only one bad guy. But because that is a lot lower than normal, there was different roles and things that everyone could do. And because it was being play tested, we had fun actually breaking the game, which was unfortunate, but good for a play testing round.
Yeah, I watched it from the outside and I'm like, I'm really glad I'm not on the inside of that game. So that's why I won't mention it. It's play testing. It'll iterate. But then we played Witch Hunt.
And super fun.
Yeah, Witch Hunt is our favorite werewolf-like game. And we've talked about it a number of times, so we won't go too much into it, except to say it's like Werewolf or Mafia, except for you. Not only do you have an allegiance of good or bad, you also have a special role which is independent of that allegiance. And it's a very self-contained ability, so it's not like Ultimate Werewolf where you have to spend 5 hours explaining the rules, and then you play for 15 minutes.
Right.
It's a really cool version. So if you're looking, it's Witch Hunt. They Level 99 Games does it. We are friends with the creator and
he's awesome.
Yeah. He's also the best moderator. So
my favorite game was also on Wednesday. So the bar was set super high day one,
which meant it was all downhill from there. Are we foreshadowing
everything else? Everything else was a cherry on top. Everything else was additionally fun, but that one was like the best.
So it's ironic because you don't actually like ice cream, but you're saying you had the ice cream on day one and then you put a bunch of toppings on, which you actually do like. But none of the toppings were as good as the ice cream. This is a metaphorical inverse explanation.
It all just sounds delicious to me.
Yeah. So anyway, Wednesday we're there till 2 o'clock a.m.
Mm-hmm.
at least. And then we went to sleep and got up nice and early because I wanted to be there early for the dealer's hall.
Wednesday night was also the meetup.
Oh, right. Yeah. So we met Anne and her family. Rusty came by. I missed a couple people because, sorry, Lance, because we went to the werewolf room around 7:30, 8 o'clock or so.
Oh, it was a little later than that.
So, but in any case, great time.
Also, and Adam was there.
Adam was there. Yep.
And then he was awesome and hung out with us a lot of the convention. Thank you, Adam.
And he taught me a game.
Yeah.
And Anne's son, Aaron.
Yeah.
Taught me a game as well.
That was super cool, too. I got to play that one.
Yep. So Aaron hung out with us a lot in the
social deduction room.
That was on stereo. Don't worry. I'll squish it to mono when I do the editing. So we had a good time there. And so Thursday morning, woke up bright and early. Thursday is like when the dealer hall opens for the first time, but pretty much most cons. So 10 o'clock, I was ready to go through, get in line. That's where Sydney stood in line. I went and picked up Graphic Novel Adventures.
Because those look cool.
They were cool. I could have backed them, but I didn't for some reason. And then I saw how cool they looked, so I said, I will take them. Give me them. And then they did. And then they said, on your credit card, please. And I'm like, oh. And then I handed them my credit card.
That's where your one a week turns into, but I can buy as much as I want at conventions.
Exactly. I have my own set of rules I live by. It's fine. So we toured that. The Origins Dealer Hall is very big compared to a small dealer hall, but is a tiny fraction compared to what we're going to see at Gen Con. Yeah. So, but the cool thing with Origins is they have the dealer hall, and then they have two other halls where the bigger companies just set up shop. So they're just there selling things whenever they want. Those halls are open, I believe, from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m., and they can be open and selling at any point during that time.
And not just selling. Those rooms are also made for demoing. And so they'll have more room to demo things that maybe have already come out and aren't the, like, new hotness. So that way you can play something, and then if you like it, buy it there. But then also just have the opportunity to come and play a game you might not have otherwise played.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. And the Dice Tower booth was actually set up in Hall C, which was one of those halls as well, which was fun because we got to kind of like go hang out with those guys. There's a lot of interviews. When we were driving in on Wednesday, I was actually streaming the Dice Tower interviews that they were doing because they were doing a live stream.
Couldn't get enough.
Yeah. Well, kind of makes you part of the show as you're going in. So that was Thursday. And Thursday I was actually running around because I wanted to do the Kickstarter episode. And I wanted to do it more of like a live feel since we were going to be at Origins. And there were a few people I tracked down to do interviews with. And if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to our Kickstarter episode. It is really just us talking to different people on the floor. And then, you know, Sydney and I have some color between each of the interviews. But we saw, what do we hear about Gravity Warfare, which is a new dexterity game.
And Rusty's game, the Sea of Plunder.
Sea of Plunder, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. We did two sea games.
Yeah.
we talked about but didn't interview A War of Whispers, and then we got to see it explained later Friday, I believe.
In the hall itself.
This is a game that I wouldn't be too surprised if you hear me say I'm going to be backing next week.
I actually really liked that game, too.
Yeah, it's really what it is it's an area control type of game, but there's five different armies, well, nations on the board, and you are trying to influence what nation wins.
You aren't those nations. You just want a certain nation to do better than another nation, and in order of what nations are better than others.
Yeah. So it does, you're still pushing cubes around a map to gain influence and trying to get, you know, those points that way, but it has kind of a different feel to it because what you're doing isn't directly fighting against each other. It's really just directly fighting against each other's spies. But anyway, yeah, check it out, A War of Whispers. What else did we do on Friday? Did we do the speed painting Friday?
I think we did.
All right. So this was your first painting of miniatures.
I can't believe you are so good at what you do because it was keeping within the lines. Like I am bad enough in a coloring book, but then when I have like a 3D, no like actual lines with paintbrushes that you think are small, but are never small enough to get those details.
Yeah, we should post a picture of your miniature.
I basically just picked a couple colors and then covered the whole thing. My goal was to cover every inch of it with paint. While some people like Chris were shading and we had two other friends doing it and theirs turned out really great too.
Yeah, so I basically convinced you that, hey, it's 50 minutes. All you got to do, even if you hate painting, it's just 50 minutes, you can do it, which is sort of terrible in a way because you only have 50 minutes. You're not going to be doing anything good. But I like that you found your own way of...
My favorite part of my figure was the fact that my sword was bent backwards. And so I had at least like a little unique piece on my little miniature.
It did look a little limp. A limp sword on the miniature. Although I got that one at first, so you gave that to me.
Yeah, we did trade. I knew that you'd probably enjoy painting a more sturdy figure. Yeah.
I've never done speed painting, though. So 50 minutes is not a lot of time. I think it turned out all right for 50 minutes.
Wow, you got a really good shade in there.
You know, I have some mad skills occasionally. So my typical is about 2 hours per, like, I don't know, D&D quality miniature, I guess. The one that I painted here would be fine for, like, board game quality miniature. Like, you wouldn't know the difference.
Also, it kind of was weird because they weren't primed and they were a little bit wet because they were, like, power wash. The first thing you had to do when you took it out was wipe it down, and I had no idea, because if I wasn't watching other people doing that, I wouldn't have done that, and then like my paint wouldn't have stuck.
Yeah, these were Reaper miniatures, or the Reaper Bone series, and I don't know if I'm in the minority or not, but I hate Reaper Bones. I hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them. In fact, more than Cards Against Humanity, Reaper miniatures annoy me, because the pewter ones, they are like, you have to assemble everything, and the bone ones don't, some of them are assembly, but they're just, they say you can paint them unprimed, but all you're doing is you have to paint a layer of paint on top of them so the next layer of paint will actually stick to it.
So by bone ones, do you mean like, is that a type of miniature?
It's their line for their white plastic miniatures.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So they were painting that. Now I will say Reaper paints, I use pretty much all of my paints are Reaper paints. Although I've gone to using Army Painter for washes because they have a nice selection of washes. And if I had to do it again, I might go something cheaper than Reaper. But I've had about 100 different bottles of Reaper paints that I've picked up over the last decade. And pretty much every single one of them still is fine. Like, you may have to shake it a little bit, maybe water it down a touch, but that's normal for paints anyway. So Reaper paints, top notch. Reaper miniatures, not my favorite. Let's see, what else did we do on Friday?
I think that was a lot of what we did. We ended up again in the Deception Room, and that was a lot of fun.
And that's, I think that was the first night I actually played a game, because I don't remember playing one. Oh, no, I might have played one Thursday. Let's see, we played a few demos of games.
Over the course of the weekend, yeah, that was a lot of fun. One of my favorites was 1 Week Werewolf, which is actually something that you've backed, so we didn't need to buy it there. But it was a different version of their 1 week or 1 day deception games, and that was really cool because it was a variable what room you might be in, but then also what role you might be, but then you have multiple days over the course of the game to change things instead of one night.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So we couldn't have bought it even if we wanted to, but the thing I really like about it is, like, I like One Night Werewolf for a really quick casual game. But it feels like a super filler to me. You know, it's a let's play war real quick and, you know, we'll both flip a card and see who wins. It's more in depth with that, and the right number of players and the right roles, One Night Werewolf gets really interesting. What they did with 1 Week Werewolf is they took the most interesting roles and allowed you to use them 5 days in a row, or 5 nights in a row.
And they're cards, and so you get to play cards over the course of the week so that you can either move during the day or use the card's power at night. And then that way you can probably do some mischievousness at night or check and see what you might be instead.
Yep. So you're moving around this mansion, and as long as you're in the same room, or castle, I guess it is, and as long as you're in the same room with another player or one of the non-player characters, you can use a particular ability, a card that you have on them. Now, the cards that you have in your hand, it's almost like a hand management, because there's 5 cards that you have. Once you've played them all, you can pick them all up, and there's special places where you could potentially refill your hands. We'd play with the kitchen that allows you to, like, refill your hand. But you have 2 insomnia cards, so that basically says when you wake up, you can look at your own token just to see what you are. You could be a werewolf, you could be a villager, you could be a tanner. Those are the only tokens that are available. If you're a villager, you want to kill a werewolf. If you're a werewolf, you want to kill, well, you just don't want to be killed. But basically, you want to kill a villager at the end of the 5 days. And if you're the tanner, you're the one that wants to be killed. So, which is one of my favorite roles. And I'm like, it makes so much sense to keep that in there.
At some point, I totally thought you were the Tanner because you were like, no, maybe we shouldn't kill anyone. Or maybe it should be, you know, this person who is definitely a villager.
Yeah, I was the Tanner at that point. And then someone made me a werewolf and then killed another werewolf and then I lost. But not the point. So as you're going around, the five cards in your hand are two Insomniacs. There's one Troublemaker, which switches to any two tokens that are in your room. There is one Robber, which switches your token with another player's token or non-player character's token. And then you can look at it. And then the last one is
the Seer.
The Seer, which allows you to look at a token of a character in your room, of one of the players in your room.
One of my favorite things about this game versus the One Night games is that this one didn't need an app. It's basically if you have a teeny little script that you can read on the night because one person wakes up, opens their eyes, does a thing, and then as long as they verbally say, my eyes are now closed, then the next person can say, my eyes are open, and do their thing. So nobody has to run it either.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of interesting because the person who taught us, he's like, I'm going to teach you a script. I was like, my eyes are open. Everyone else's eyes are closed. I'm going to play the Insomniac. And then you do whatever you're going to do. And then it's like, my eyes are closed. And then the next player in the turn order will do the same thing. The thing is that you're going to say that you're playing a card, but you don't have to actually be playing that card. And I think the script encourages this little bit of like manipulation of, I'm going to play the Troublemaker. And then everyone wakes up after everyone's played. It's like, okay, so you play the Troublemaker. What did you do? It's like, well, I changed this person to this. But you didn't play the Troublemaker at all. You played the Seer or whatever you might have done. So I really liked this game.
It was great.
Yep, looking forward to it. All right, what's the next one?
So we played The Mind.
Oh, yeah. So this was one that we played just before we left. The Mind was the game that kept selling out. They had 100 copies each day, and you had to be there within the first half hour or so to get it. And after the first day, we were just staying up way too late. We weren't going to be able to be there at 10 a.m.
When I went into this game, I didn't actually think it was going to be as fun as it was.
Well, that's because it's hard to describe as a game. So if you haven't heard about The Mind, if you've heard anything about The Mind, you've probably heard it's not sort of kind of like a game. It's just like you just have to play it to understand it. So that's what I told City. I'm like, all right, we can't get a copy of this, but they have a demo table and it's available. So we sit down. I give her a card. I take one card. That's what round one is. You each have a card. And then we just look at each other. And
stare in each other's eyes.
Trying to figure out which one of us, of this one card we have, is the lowest number. And then I played my card.
And then I was very excited because I played my card and it was a higher number. So we played it in order and we won that round.
Success! Yay! But then, round two, you have two cards each. Then three cards and four cards, up to 12 cards when you're playing a two-player game. Now, if it were just that, it would be kind of tricky to kind of get around. But there is ways of get around, like saying that it's just kind of a hunch thing. But there are lives and, well, there's little bunny lives and throwing stars, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but bear with me for a moment. So the bunny lives, if we were to misplay cards, if I played my bigger card before you played your smaller card, you lose a bunny life. If you lose all your bunny lives, you're done. The mind is dead. Dun, dun, dun. But the throwing stars, if at some point we're just not sure who should go next, we can both like hold up our hand in kind of like the stop position. And if we both do that, then we get to say the lowest card that we have in our hands, which gets you unstuck in that situation. But you have to use a throwing star to get rid of it.
And then the person with the lowest number would put it down, and then you'd keep playing from there with that same hand in that same level.
Exactly. Now, one of the interesting things about the throwing stars, though, is if my lowest card is I guess with the lives, losing the lives, we'll get back to that one a second. So the throwing stars allow you to know which card, at least, that we should play next. Now, the lives can be used as a form of sacrificial throwing star, because what can happen is if you play a card out of order, you lose a life, but you continue to play, but all cards are discarded from the hands that are less than the cards you just played. So if you have like a really tricky, hand, but I have like a 99 in my hand, I could just play that 99, and then we have to discard all the other hands and like, okay, we lost a life, but we were able to get past this round. Right. Now, if I have a 50 and that's the card I play, and we still have like five or six cards left in our hands, it doesn't work as well. But that's where the strategy comes in. It's really a fascinating game.
And if you're staring at each other long enough and neither of you could figure out who's going to put the card down, it's a lot of fun trying to get through that.
Yeah. So I recommend it. It's like, I don't even know how much it was. I mean, it's either like $15 or $20. Yeah. It is a crazy concept. I don't know if it should be like nominated for all these games of the year and all that kind of stuff. But at the other side of it, I'm like, it is probably one of the most unique things I've done, even though it is a ridiculously simple idea.
Also, it's one of those games that if you can get your kids to play, they're silent.
Yeah. If I had to play this with like a 5-year-old being like, you just played an 89 as your first card. Uh-huh. And you had 7 cards lower than that. Also, I'm not sure how we got to level 9 with the 6-year-old, but I have a really smart 6-year-old.
Of course.
All right, what's the next one?
So we also played Heads Will Roll, which is made by the same people that made Dragoon.
So Dragoon is a terrible game, but it's made of actual metal. So we got like the deluxe version of this because it's
absolutely gorgeous
looking. Gorgeous. Yeah. It's gorgeous if you like the art style, but the pieces themselves are like literal gold-plated, silver-plated. I want to say...
copper?
I don't know if there's a copper. There might be. There's 4 different types of metals, but one of them is gold. So we got the 24-karat gold one. It is now the inset to our dining room table because it looks really cool, but the game's kind of horrible. But there's skulls in this game and a dragon head, and they decided to make a little... dexterity game out of these pieces. So you have 5 skulls and 1 dragon head. So you have,
I think it was 4 skulls and a dragon head, because there's 2 sets of skulls that are the same color as each other.
2 black skulls, 2 silver skulls, 1 gold skull, and 1 dragon head.
Oh, that's right.
And you roll them all out on the table, and then you're trying to flick the dragon head into the other gold skull. If you do, you get a point. If you happen to go through the silver or black skulls, you get bonus points. And if those skulls happen to be laying on their same side or in the same orientation, you get bonus points on top of that. You get a double of what the bonus would be.
And how you determine where they are on the table is you roll them like dice. So you pick them all up into your hand, and then you drop them on the table.
And there's a rule that says if any of them fall off the table, you lose your turn and the next person goes. Which I think should be a rule for every single game. I believe that if you can't roll dice and keep them on the table, get a dice tray, or you just lose your turn. But
or again, a gaming table.
I might be a little salty this drive home. I think it's the lack of sleep. I'm totally friendly. Ask Adam. No, don't ask Adam. He was in a werewolf game with me. Okay, so moving on. This game was interesting. They just basically repurposed the components and packaged them in a nice little way. I think it's better than Dragoon.
I had more fun playing it, yes.
So, it's more balanced, I think, than Dragoon, if that makes sense. All right, next one.
Next one is Cursed Court.
Oh, yeah, you can explain this one.
Yeah, this one was a lot of fun. It's kind of like a betting game where you all start with some chips, and then we had crowns as well. And what happens is you have a card between everyone playing, and that card is a person at court. So you could get a queen, a jester, a... king, anybody who might be at court.
There's 9 different ones.
9 different ones. And these are also represented on the board in front of you. That's in a grid of 9.
3x3.
Three by three. So then you and the person next to you see one of these cards, and then you and the person on the other side of you also see one of these cards. Feels like werebeasts here. But then those people you know are at court. And so those people on the actual board itself are part of your what you will do to get points at the end of the game. And then the dealer will also then deal cards that everyone can use, just like poker. And so those will come out, and they might be more people at court. And so how you get points is you will end up putting your crowns on the people on the board in different combinations.
So, yeah, it's kind of like roulette meets Texas Hold'em, but with a King's Court theme. So just like you could, so roulette, you can bet on numbers, right? You can bet between 1 and 32, I think, and there's a couple double zeros. So, but if you place your bet on a single number in roulette, that gives you the most points. You can also place your number, say I want to split it on 2 and 3. So I'm going to get 2 points for either 2 or 3, and that's going to be awesome. Or I could also put it on 2, 3, and then the 2 numbers that are underneath it, which are I honestly have no idea, but I'll say 12 and 13. So now I'm splitting it between four. So the exact same thing happens with this, except for the scoring is reversed. If I put my crown on the king, every time the king shows up, I'm going to get a point. But if I put my crown on the row that the king is in, and every single one of those characters shows up, I will get 3 points for that. And you can also have the, you know, you have the corners and stuff like that. I thought it was a very interesting game. There's also some chips in there. So if you want to protect your bet because other people can knock you off, if you put your crown on something and they want to knock you off, they just have to put chips on there. If you already have chips, they have to double the amount of chips that you have on there. So there's this kind of back and forth tug of war for the best spots after you see what cards are being flipped up.
And the chips are used to push each other out, not necessarily for how many points you get. You just need the crown in the right place on the right bet.
Yeah. So we played this with Alyssa and Paul, two of our very close con friends, and you liked it. They liked it.
Yes, it was something that we ended up buying by the end of the convention.
We didn't buy it.
Oh, that's right. They ended up buying
it. They might have bought it, yeah. Because I know I didn't buy it because I did not like this game.
Oh.
So, which I don't think I mentioned at the time, but it just seems very random and haphazard. The chips are unnecessary. And for what the game is, it's a $50 game. Like, it's a big box or medium-sized box for $50 for essentially a 9x9 placement betting board. So I wasn't super thrilled with it. I enjoyed the demo. The demo was fine. I just could not have seen myself to go back and play it later. So I was totally fine that Paul and Alyssa wanted to buy it. They can bring it, and if they want to play it, I will play it with them.
Poker is a difficult thing to enjoy.
No, I love poker. Poker's great. This game wasn't. All right, let's go to something that I did like.
Well, the last one on the list is Welcome To.
Oh, I did like this one. You didn't like this one, though.
I didn't like this one as much, no.
Okay, so Welcome To is a roll and write, but it doesn't actually have any rolling. What you end up doing is you have three decks of cards that you're going to shuffle and put into equal
piles.
Equal piles. Oh, that's a good thing. Yeah, piles. Piles is a good word. You're going to then flip over the top card. Now, each card has a number on the front and a ability on the back. So the numbers are going to range from 1 to 15, and the abilities I'm going to do off the top of my head, you have fences, you have businesses, you have pools, you have something else, and then something else.
Yeah, there are the construction.
Oh, right.
And then there was one more.
But whatever the case, so we'll go with those four first. Remember, we're driving. Oh, look, this truck is, nope, the truck's fine. Okay, so what you're going to do is you have this pad of paper in front of you, or a piece of paper in front of you, and each time a number comes up, you need to write it in one of three streets in your town. So Welcome To ... is you're making your own little town. And the first street is relatively small, the second one's medium-sized, and the third one's large. And you can write the number from any one of the three piles on any of the houses. And the end goal is to make, you can't write a number if it is greater than on the left side of the number. So it has to be ascending, essentially. So once you write the number down, awesome. The next thing you can do is choose to use the ability that corresponds with that number inside of that pile.
Parks. Parks was the last
one. Parks. Good. Yes. So if it's a fence, I can separate, you know, yards in my on my street. And I may want to do that because I can get bonuses for scoring, like, you know, one lot sizes, two lot sizes, three lot sizes, etc. And I make those lot sizes by making fences. For the parks, each street has a park. And if you want to use the park action, you fill in a park. The more park dots you have filled up, the more points you're going to get at the end for each street. The construction sites allow you to modify the number so you can go up one or two or down one or two. So it makes it very flexible. But if you use too many construction sites, you can actually lose points. Or actually, no, the construction sites, using them, as you gain points.
It's the business one that you could lose points.
So then you have the business one. And the business one allows you to, like, make a 0.5. So if you had a 2 and a space and a 3, with the business one, you could say, okay, I have a 2 and then I have a 2B. But when you use too many businesses, you start getting negative points because you were just doing poor planning. And then the pool one, some of the houses have pools. And if you put the number where you have a pool, you circle that pool. And the more pools you have, the more points you get. Once you're all out of cards from all the three. Actually, all piles flip at the end once everybody has done what they're going to do, and you have new abilities and new numbers. Once you've gone through all the piles, you add up the points and see what happens. Now, Sydney, have you played a roll and write recently? Well, I guess we played Steamrollers,
yeah,
which you didn't like either.
No.
So I think you just don't like that roll and write style of game.
No, I don't think that's my thing. But this game was interesting, and I did enjoy playing it. I just wasn't having as much fun as you guys were having.
Yeah. One of the things I really like about these kind of, like, the shared roll and write. I mentioned previous episode, Yahtzee is, like, the original roll and write. But in Yahtzee, everyone's doing their own thing, and you don't share the dice. But with this shared roll and write, I love the idea that you can have an entire room playing these. Like, I don't need to worry about, you know, how many players do we have? Oh, it doesn't matter. This scales. As long as you can see the cards, it would work. I can see this working in a classroom or an icebreaker at a seminar or something like that, where you just kind of show it up on a projector and say, okay, here are the cards as we, move through, and who got the most points.
And it's also interesting because even with the exact same cards in front of you, after a handful of them are flipped, you guys have completely different boards. Like, none of us had the same board at the end, but we had the same choices every single turn.
Yep. And that's one of those cool things that you just kind of, you're building your own thing. Avenue's another one that's just like this, where it's you flipping cards and you're building your own board. So let's see. What else do we have?
Those are all the games we demoed, but we did buy some. Actually, we bought quite a few.
Not that many.
Well, we bought enough to fill the trunk.
We did buy enough to fill the trunk. But in my defense, all right, now we have a big trunk. Fine. I have no defense.
There was a lot of deals, actually, so I could see where you got sucked in.
Yeah. Well, we don't need to talk about Vast because we've already done that a number of times. But I will say I bought a vast amount of Vast. The other one I got, we mentioned Graphic Novel Adventures. I did get a chance to play this while you were playing Witch Hunt or Werewolf or whatever you were playing at the time. So I was actually bringing around one of these, the graphic novels, and anytime that I had some time just to kind of sit on my own and play, I'm like going through this story. And I'm still not through it. I've probably been playing it maybe 3 or 4 hours now. And the one I'm playing right now, I think it's La Grue, I don't know if it's made up or a foreign name for werewolf. And really the premise of this is you are a wizard apprentice that gets bitten by a werewolf. And your sole goal, and the only thing that you know about what you're doing in the book, is survive. So you start going around and just trying to survive.
As the werewolf?
As yourself that can turn into a werewolf, but sort of, because you don't know how, you're just a brand new werewolf, so you have to figure it all out.
Interesting.
So I couldn't even say if I was halfway through. I can say that I've gone through, and the character sheet goes up to level, I think like 7 or 8, and I'm level 3 right now.
Wow.
So, and I have a lot more experience that I can get up to those higher levels. So we'll see how far I am.
Is it one of those where, like, from the Pick Your Own Adventures, I remember, I would be reading a page and it would send me to something like maybe 100 pages later, then 20 pages back, and then 20 pages later. But is that what you're doing? Or is it one page after the other, they're just giving you different things while you're going?
You're doing the first. Oh. But instead of jumping around to pages, you're jumping around to panels.
Cool.
So it's like a comic book, graphic novel, more literal. And it'll say, go to panel, 200. And then it'll say, go to panel 15. And then you're going to go to panel 180.
Interesting.
And on the bottom of each of the pages, it has, like, all the panel numbers on there. So you can flip through it like you would a normal Choose Your Own Adventure. It's almost always a single panel at a time. The intro may be a little bit more story. There was, like, 3 pages of intro. And it tells you the rules as you need to. So you just literally open up the book and start reading, and it'll give you all the information you need as you play. There's 5 different ones. So this one is a werewolf one. There's also one that is like a Sherlock Holmes mystery with 4 different mysteries in it, and you can play as Sherlock or Watson.
That one looked really cool.
There's another one called Captive, where you're trying to figure out, rescue someone who got kidnapped. Apparently that has a adult storyline to it. It's a little bit darker than the other ones. The werewolf one I've been playing so far, I think that would be totally fine for kids. I don't know about the Sherlock Holmes ones. I haven't played that one yet because these are going to take me a while to get through. But I'm really impressed with them. One of the things I had to do was immediately lose my desire to make comic books stay pristine. Ooh. Because I used to collect comic books. And so you'd be very gentle with the pages. After the fifth or sixth flipping through, I'm just like, okay, whatever. We're treating this like a book that I'm just going to beat up, and I'll buy another copy if I really care. But I think kind of this Choose Your Own Adventure books are supposed to be worn.
They'll look loved.
Yeah. They just need to be, they need to feel like you've gone through and adventured in them. So let's see, what else did I buy?
Oh, there was the Lantern game by Lark Lamp Games. And that one looked so awesome when we passed by the booth.
Well, I'm letting you talk about this one because I would not have bought this had you not said, I've walked by this booth like five times and I want to see what this is.
Yeah. So basically the booth itself just had an awning over the booth. And then underneath there was a single lamp on the table with some pieces around the lamp. So we walk up to the guy sitting there, and he's actually the creator of the game. And I couldn't tell from as far away as I was until I walked up. The pieces around the lantern were actually strategically within the light of the lantern. The lantern was giving off light, and the awning was there to help give the correct shadow. And then you actually play the game within the light that the lantern gives off. And it's one of the games available is a one versus many. So it's one person against three different people. And they're in each side of the lantern. There's four sides. It's a square lantern. And the three are trying to get to the opposite ends of the other side of the lantern, while the one is trying to catch or get into the same,
shadow grid.
The same shadow grid as one of the three. And the way that that works is there's normal movement between the different, the grid that the shadow and light make. But then also, because within the lantern, what is making the light is actually panels. So one of the things you can do on your turn is pull out one of those panels, flip it to the other side, and put it back in. And when he did that, like, that was the coolest part of what was going on.
Yeah, because basically he took one side of the board and totally flipped it. And, like, you could potentially do this without using light and shadow. And, like, it's certain that the lantern is a gimmick, but it's a really cool gimmick. And I can actually see it being used in such a way where you could play this at night. You could go on a camping trip and play this game.
Or when your power goes out at your house and you have nothing else to do, or you can't even see games you might want to play. Yeah.
Or the kids are trying to, like, sneak in a game before they go to bed and can't have the light on to see a board game, but the board is light. The idea is really, really neat. Another thing you can do is you can switch two sides of the lantern, like completely changing the board that you're looking at then. And when I saw this, I'm just like, okay, number one, this is a really cool wooden, like, it's a kind of laser cut wood, and the lantern, it goes together and comes apart really easily. It's an LED bulb with three AAAs, so the battery will last forever. And I had walked by him probably a half a dozen times, and he was just literally sitting there quietly in the shadows waiting for somebody to come and talk to him. And I felt really bad because a lot of times you go to these shows and you're just like, you know, the people that are trying to sell whatever they can, but he didn't have anything on the table.
He had a single lantern, and what it looked like was maybe it was possibly like a themed lantern. Maybe he was trying to sell something with maybe the dice are in the lantern or something, but yeah. Then it was an actual game.
Yeah. I really didn't know what I would be asking about if I'd walked up to the table. And so when you went over there and he started explaining it, I'm like, oh, and he was like the nicest guy. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I want this. He's like, okay, well, you can get the lantern in a cardboard box. It goes together like this and this one game, and it's only $40. I'm like, no, 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 no. I want everything. And he's like, even the special wooden box one. I'm like, everything. So there's two games actually that he's doing. So I think we got two lanterns, one for each game, in a nice cut wooden box. But even all of that combined was $100, which granted is a lot, but for the amount of like love and, you know, desire, like what he put into it, it's worth it. I'm a sucker for people who want to sell stuff that they are really passionate about. That's why you love me.
Absolutely.
Did I buy anything else?
You bought quite a few things, but I think those are the biggest ones.
All right. Well, we never got our hands on Buying the Mind, but we will pick that one up. That actually really shouldn't be hard to just order now because it's U.S. distribution exists. All right. What else about Origins? We did food. We did the North Market.
We also went to the Origins Awards.
Oh, right. The Origins Awards. So Origins Awards, if you're ever there, you should always go to the Origins Awards because they used to be super, super poorly attended. And about 4 years ago, just out of a whim, they said, okay, there's a bunch of games in the back table that we were up for awards this year. And as you walk out, just take one. And there were maybe 30 or 40 people in the audience at that time. And I think word got out because 2 years later, the room was packed. And
it was kind of hard to get a seat.
Yeah. And what they did is they actually had a bunch of copies of some of the bigger games that they were giving out. And everyone, as you walked out, you could just grab any game you wanted. So I think I picked up Letter Tycoon and you picked up
Jacuzzi,
which I've heard great things about both. Actually, Josh wanted me to play Letter Tycoon. That's something that plays with Gloria quite a bit.
Yeah. And the one that I picked out looked really cool because it was basically a kind of deception game where one person is, well, everyone in the game has committed a murder. But then everyone wants to pin it on one person. So the game really has no winner. It just has one loser. You just have to try and get the murders, all of the murders, pinned on one person.
Which I'm actually looking forward to that one, too. So yeah. As a free game, I'm totally in.
Right?
So the Origins Awards were awesome. There was two Hall of Fame inductees. And that was one of the Hall of Fame inductees was Eric Lang, who I've been getting to know over a few conventions. We met a friend on the Dice Tower cruise who's good friends with Eric Lang. And now anytime I'm hanging out with her, I'm hanging out with Eric by, you know, just passive association and being like, I'm not worthy. But Eric's actually a really, really, really down to earth, like really nice guy. And he was inducted in the Origins Hall of Fame, and I think he really deserved it.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely. Everything he's already given, and he has so much more to give.
Yeah, and he had a great speech, you know, talking about how he got into the industry and how he would have never gotten into the industry had like mega superstar designers not given a kid a chance and just talked to him about his game designs and tell him what he was doing wrong. And you know, and eventually he wasn't doing anything wrong, and now he's like a majority shareholder in CMON. So, and the director of game design there. So,
just goes to show that, you know, how much time and effort he did put into it before he actually became successful.
Yep. Gloomhaven won Board Game of the Year.
Absolutely.
Which was totally well deserved. There was most of the Game of the Year, or most of the Origin Awards and the fan favorites were matched each time. But I think, was it the Dungeons & Dragons one that was separate?
That won the fan award.
Yeah, well, Dungeons & Dragons, I believe, won the actual best RPG, but I think Pathfinder or Starfinder might have won the fan award or something like that. You can look up all the Origins Awards, again, driving, but it is a cool show. And then right after that was the Dice Tower Live show.
That was super fun.
Yeah, and Tom does a great job, like, at the live things. They'll do a little bit of talking, you know, a game they played, and then they do, like, a game show to try to get the audience involved. And it's always just a really good, fun time. You can listen to that, and you'll listen to basically the entire show at the Dice Tower podcast. So just search the Dice Tower. And if you don't listen to that podcast, it's worth listening to. What else do we have? Like, this morning we woke up. Well, last night was Saturday night.
No, last night was Saturday night.
So Saturday night, Sydney likes to stay up all night long playing Werewolf, Witch Hunt. And I'm like, we have to drive back, so I'm going to leave you here at midnight.
And you have to kind of be alive and awake to drive us home where I can nap in the car if I need to.
Yep, so she shows up at 6 a.m. We have to check out of the hotel at 11. We checked out of the hotel at noon, but I let her sleep until 11.
And it worked out okay. I got a handful of hours of sleep. I'm doing okay now.
You slept for 2 hours as we were driving from Ohio to Indiana. Got some food and then jumped on the mics.
Absolutely.
So that was our Origin experience.
It was super great being able to hang out with all of the people that we ended up seeing. And the listeners of Tabletop Game Talk are fantastic and super great. And anytime we can spend time with them, it's absolutely the best.
Oh, I should mention, Adam, thank you for teaching me Push Fight.
Game is awesome.
Yeah, if you're into two-player abstracts, Push Fight, Google it. It's it's really, really simple to learn. It can play in like 5 minutes to 10 to 15 minutes. And there's just, given the size of the board, which is a relatively small, just over 9x9, well, I guess it's a, I don't know, 4x4, just over 4x4, so there's some extra parts on there. And there's two rules. That's it. And the amount of game that you can get out of it and where you can play it anywhere.
It's so strategic for the both of us that like Homeworld. It's on the same level of thought, and it was so much fun. Okay.
Much faster and much easier to learn than Homeworld.
Definitely.
But in exchange, after Adam taught me Push Fight, I taught him Homeworld, which he then beat me in. But in my defense, I am bad at that game. So that's my full defense.
And if he knows Push Fight, he's pretty good at strategic games.
Exactly. Actually, he was the one that suggested us doing two-player dueling games.
Cool.
So it's a passion of his. Anne, thank you for hanging out with us. I know you had to spend a lot of time demoing games, but I think that's what makes Anne such a great person in general, is like she really likes spreading this hobby, and her kids were great.
It was wonderful hanging out with them.
Yep. Aaron taught us a new game that he's working on in prototype form, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where that goes the next time we meet.
That's going to be really cool.
Yep. And I think that is going to make a show.
Cool.
I have no idea how long it is because I'm driving and I can't look at time. And then is this the first time you've had to read the outro credits?
I think this will be the first time I've ever read the names before.
All right. Well, I'm going to do my spiel from memory, which is you can follow us on Facebook @ Tabletop Game Talk Podcast, Twitter @TabletopGameTLK. I'm Game Master Chris on Twitter as well. You can Patreon us at TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. All of our patrons are automatically entered into all of our giveaways, and you can win free stuff. And for the rest of this, I will let Sydney talk.
All right. Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Chiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Toby Kraft, Eric Salander, Adam Kribliz, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, and Trevor Davis. Until next week, when we talk about asymmetrical games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So now maybe you won't actually skip the names when you listen to the podcast.
But it's like a perfect amount of like 15-second intervals.
Yes, but the amount of effort that goes into reading those names.
I don't know. If you know how many I got right, you know how many I've actually heard at the end of the podcast.
I think you did a pretty decent job.
Thank you.